Welcome to Kayfabe Gimmicks, this is Snoova, and we're here to review No Mercy, the greatest wrestling video game ever created today.
Well, it was when the 64 was the hottest thing that ever happened.
I mean, I still think the 64 was the hottest thing that ever happened.
I loved No Mercy. I ran 99 tag team matches against every level, but we were busy doing First Blood. Those were the days.
You know, you could do the Royal Rumble Endless with a woman, First Blood, and never lose because women couldn't bleed in No Mercy.
That was awesome, too. I had a spinning heel kick that just, like, drew blood, so it was like, do a match, run corner to corner, do a spinning heel kick, over, faster than Goldberg.
Steven, what's your favorite No Mercy memory?
Doing the people's elbow.
What? What do you mean?
Just that move in that game was so interactive. Like, I'm a Rock fan, so I always played No Mercy as the Rock.
Was that the one where you would see the elbow pad, like, literally fly at the camera?
I think that was the second
one. Oh, WrestleMania 2000? Great game, too. Anyways, we're not here to discuss No Mercy, the video game. We are here to discuss No Mercy, the pay-per-view. Holy shit, it happened.
Sure did. Oh, who the hell are we?
Introduce yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Ruff Lee, and I am the advocate for women's wrestling all across the board on Kayfabe Gimmicks.
And I'm Snoova.
I'm Jellybean Prather. Prather. These nuts.
You mean like Prather's peanuts?
Like I introduced myself, so screw you guys.
The host with the most is the face that runs the place. That's Snoova, the guy who won tonight's scorecard. Every pay-per-view at Kayfabe Gimmicks. You can find us on Facebook. And I know that you've got one. Kayfabe Gimmicks. We run a scorecard for every WWE Network pay-per-view. And it's always a lot of fun. And Snoova is now Mr. Five-time.
It's not actually five-time. I think it's
three
or four.
It's actually three-time.
Is it really? It is really three.
Yeah. But you're working on it.
I'm working my way there, man. I wasn't sure if I was going to win it. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Between Steven and shout out to Rob Rhodes, he really came in there, man.
When
I have to wonder if he's cheating sometimes.
When I won off of the first match for tonight, then I knew that I wasn't going to win tonight, but I'm okay with that. My time will come again.
Well, let's start right there. Steven, go ahead and talk to us about that first match of the night. Ooh-ha Nation.
I can't believe they let Elias win. I'm sorry. I just don't. Why is he there? Why? I mean, I'm sorry. You know, it's just a rehash of Jeff Jarrett, the Honky Tonk Man. At least have him hit somebody with the guitar.
I'm waiting for that. Waiting and waiting and waiting. I think they want a major pay-per-view so it can be like a shock factor to the new generation that doesn't remember that at all.
I don't know. It's just, Elias just doesn't, I guess, gel with me. Like, I don't really buy into the character.
Look, I don't hate the character. I don't mind the character. The character's okay. His wrestling is decent at best. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, B-plus player getting pushed, right? Like we like to talk about.
He's got a B-plus build, the kind that they like.
Ooh-ha Nation, though?
And A-plus build. And he's part of
huge
a great stable. I mean, it's worldwide, guys.
I love the Titus Worldwide brand. I don't understand what the fuck they're doing with it. I kind of wish Tozawa was there at ringside, too, and Apollo was at Tozawa's matches, just because, hey, we're together, guys. We're a team. I love Ooh-ha, though. Like, seriously, Apollo Crews is one of the most talented wrestlers you'll find in this day and age. Like, that man's immensely athletic. You can say everything you want about Jason Jordan, but holy shit, UHA Nation is equally talented.
Yeah, I just think I really feel like Cruz needs Titus. He's an amazing wrestler, but like his promos and energy building kind of stuff, just not there for him. Worldwide.
That's all we're thinking about when we think of Apollo Crews these days. But that's, you're absolutely right. He needs Titus. But hey, that's what Titus is for.
I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't need Titus. I'm just saying that I like the man. I love his work. I wish they'd let him do the Shooting Star Press again. I wish he would go back to using the triple assault, his triple powerbomb move. I mean, he's immensely athletic, dude. He's strong. He's got a great build. He's got a good look. Maybe he does need Titus. That's not necessarily a problem. Brock Lesnar needs Paul Heyman. That doesn't take away from what Brock Lesnar does offer us. Right?
That's for sure.
So, I mean, going on, Elias won. It was kind of weird. It's kind of an upset. And that was the pre-show. And moving straight on from the pre-show, we went into the Intercontinental Championship match. And I was really surprised by this. Really surprised.
I can't even believe it was the first match. Like, I really would have thought the Cruiserweight match would have been first.
If you're going to have the crowd's attention, you got to come out swinging. It makes sense that they do the IC belt to begin the show. We've got something that we've done a lot of build into. We've got someone that the crowd really, really is behind. But, you know, to me, that makes sense.
Okay. Look, here's my thing, right? I get it. We need it. It's a good way to start your show. But can we talk about the WWE's problem recently of having the champion come out first? I mean, seriously, Ruff, what the fuck is this? Miz came out first, and he's the champion.
It's not a normal situation this time. I'm going to give him a pass on that, because it's a hometown
okay,
crowd.
Okay, I mean, I see that, but they've been doing this for months now.
Yeah,
it's a problem. But, I mean, this was so hometown that Miz got a yes kick response.
I feel like he's been getting that for a minute too. I mean, he's kind of over, but kind of still a heel. It's weird. He's really tweener status.
That's fine. I mean, we love anti-heroes.
And he definitely falls into that category. I can see that.
My favorite thing that he has said in the past few months was when he got the belt and the crowd cheered, "You deserve it." And he said, "You know, that would mean a lot more if you didn't do it every time
championship." I understand where you come from. I want to go to Steven here. Steven, tell me how you were feeling when there was this weird moment where Jason Jordan started attacking the Miztourage before they ever touched
him. I say good for him. I say beat the shit out of Bo Dallas every time he's out there.
I mean, I bring it up because I felt like I saw some backlash between Twitter and the group on Facebook, Kayfabe Gimmicks. I felt like there was a little bit of like, what the fuck, why is he attacking these people if he's the
because
face?
Because I think really, if you think about it, is every time, it's kind of build up. It's kind of payback for every other time that they've attacked him first. He knows they're going to get involved. I mean, you've got two guys, you know, anytime someone has a group of people out there with them, has it ever come down to where that person doesn't get involved in some aspect?
I understand. At one point, I was completely going to say I did not feel there was any reason to say that they had created an interruption in the match until Curtis Axel kicked him in the head. But I don't want to go that far quite yet. I want to go back to Ruff and be like, Ruff, how did you feel about the situation at hand?
I mean, this is supposed to be an ongoing feud, but there are still, You know how the company has a tendency that when they like someone, they give them a push whether or not they're ready? I don't have to bring up anyone's names, Roman Reigns. But, you know, you said that you noticed that Jason Jordan's got lyrics in his theme music. In my mind, lyrics equal someone that they got long-term plans for when you're talking about, you know, the fact that, like, there's so much instrumental entrances. And, like, you know, you usually save it for the big guys for them to have any kind of lyrics behind it. So I think that they've got a plan with Jason Jordan, but they really don't know what they're doing with it yet, and he's not quite ready for it.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I like it. And I'm going to use that as my segue, actually, into my favorite part of the match. There is a moment where Jason Jordan, and I mean, I like this kid. I love this kid. He, again, goes right into that UHA Nation thing. He's very athletic. He has a look that is okay. It's not really a problem for me. But his talent's what really sticks out to me. Promos are not there yet, but in ring ability, he literally does a Northern Light suplex into a roll. He does the bridge and everything, rolls over, bridges that again, and I was impressed out of my fucking ass at that moment. That was like my shining moment of that match, I think. What was your guys' shining moments?
I'm gonna say the same moment. Like, the only thing that I really would have liked to seen is
was a third Northern Light suplex.
No, you know, he did the straps. He did the straps like his daddy does. But I would have liked to see him pull out an ankle lock. I think him pull, you know.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree.
He pulled out, you know, he pulled out the crossface. But I think it would have been better if he had pulled out an ankle lock. If they're going to play this storyline out, that would have been just fantastic.
Ruff, what was your favorite moment of the match?
I really loved that whole Northern Lights thing, too. You know, I think that what you were saying about the crossface, I'm pretty sure that the ankle lock is going to come around, and it wouldn't surprise me if they go crossface to ankle lock. But I can almost guarantee you that the ankle lock is coming, especially because after the pay-per-view, I stayed around and watched the after show and everything. And then there was a brand new ad for 2K18. And of course they're promoing who the, you know, special edition for the pre-order is and everything. But the way they went about it is what got my attention. There's a guy in a hoodie who's going through ruins, and he goes walking through, and you see him pass by a couple old belts. And then from out of the rubble, he picks up a wrestling boot, and you finally get to see the person's face and its angle. And the look on his face wasn't ready to fight. It's mad that he's not fighting.
I mean, I see where you're coming from. I see where you come from. I've seen that one before. I did.
Did you guys see that?
Kind of a spoiler. I will tell you, I absolutely adored the later on moment where we got the new 2K trailer. There was a new trailer tonight with Snoop Dogg. That was cooler to me. But I see where you're coming from.
That thing was amazing. The Snoop trailer was awesome.
No, definitely agreed. As for the crossface into an ankle lock, I don't want to get into it right this split second, but there's a moment later on in the night where you are going to get to watch John Cena versus Roman Reigns, and John Cena latches on the STF. You. STF you. Shut the fuck up. I don't give a shit. I'm gonna call it that still. And Roman's getting dangerously close to the rope, so he drags him back and slaps back on another STFU. And it's a better-looking STFU? Sure. But my whole thing is I wish Cena would do the whole, okay, this one's not quite working, let me switch it up a little bit sometimes, too. I feel like that's a very important thing in wrestling. But moving on, we went straight from that match into the tag team title match, right? Was that what happened next?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was it. I think it was that too. Alrighty.
Give me some thoughts. Give me some opinions. What happened with that?
It was a match of the night. To me.
I'm going to agree. In a lot of ways, I'm agreeing right now.
Oh, wait a second. We are ahead of ourselves. We are ahead of ourselves. The Bray Wyatt match was next.
Well, you're going to have to wait to hear about our match of the night, I guess. Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor. Start it off rough. Talk to us,
Balor was great at selling injured ribs. I mean, I felt like a lot of times, like, people forget to continue the sell as they fight their way through the match. So I got to give props to Balor for that. As far as this is going to be a strange thing, because we got to talk about these two matches back to back. I noticed at the time it happened, like, Bray got smacked in the mouth and he was bleeding at the mouth. He was laughing about the fact that he could taste his own blood. I saw it on his tongue and I saw it in his beard, and he was trying to point it out. He was trying to point it out to Finn and laughing about it and make it part of how he was telling the story. And the commentators ignored it. And I noted at the time that the commentators ignored it. And that's going to be interesting when we get around to the tag team match. But those were that's the big thing I noticed.
Interesting side note. And another thing that's going to come up here near the end of the night. Braun was also bleeding tonight. One of the hits he took under the eye actually busted open a little bit. There was some blood tonight, and you know I always enjoy a little bit of blood in my wrestling. And that does go into the sidebar real quick. WWE released a survey this past week to all of its WWE Network subscribers about what kind of content you might be willing to pay more to get. And one of those things was a TV PG-14 show. Exclamation point, quotation marks, hashtag hardcore show. Please and thank you. Please and thank you.
Can't happen soon enough. I miss my hardcore wrestling. I miss it. I miss it so much.
I will, let me say this, right? At this point in time, I was very sour when the Finn Balor match started, actually. The whole, okay, I'm attacking you thing kind of felt played out after Rusev versus Orton at SummerSlam. And I was like, are we really fucking doing this right now? Don't let this match not happen. And then it went longer than I thought it was going to. But that didn't mean it was better than it should have been.
Very much so.
That's fair, right? I can say that Finn Balor's promo a few weeks ago about, okay, you don't want the demon, but you want the man who created the demon. What's worse is probably the man who had the mind to create the demon. That was probably Finn Balor's best promo he's ever had since he's joined the WWE, including all of his days in NXT.
Definitely my favorite that he's done.
Steven, how are you feeling about this match, man? I mean, what was on your mind during it?
I was like, oh, look. Wyatt's gonna lose again. I mean, that's how I go into almost any Wyatt match. To me, Wyatt is like the biggest drop ball the WWE has had. They could have built something with him, but he's
even
just
his
kind
world
of,
championship run, I mean, is pretty questionable at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I was just like, oh, it's, when I was doing my scorecard, it was like, oh, who's in the next match? Oh, it's Finn Balor versus Wyatt. Balor. Without even thinking about anything else, I was just like, Balor.
I really went the exact same way. I'm not going to tell you I didn't. I did. I, at the same time, the match kind of threw me for a loop a couple times. I will say that. There was a moment where I thought maybe Bray really was going to take this. I was kind of excited. You know, I really wanted a swerve. I wanted Braun to win tonight just because it would have been a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I'm not gonna say it was a bad match. I actually thought it was an interesting match, but just, you know, when you can almost guarantee you know how it's gonna turn out every single time. Like, anytime, it's more surprising when Wyatt wins a match.
I don't disagree with you. I don't. And I really don't understand the point of feeding Bray to Finn. I feel like they could have traded blows or whatever.
Like, as someone put it, the better way to do this would have been to have Bray, Wyatt, and Balor face first. You know, no demon, human to human, okay? And have Wyatt win. And then have the demon show up, challenge Wyatt again, and then win. And then have that this next one as the send-off match.
No DQ at TLC, hardcore rules, go all out.
Yeah. Yeah, but instead we got Balor going over twice. Bray Wyatt gained nothing from this, and really, Balor gained nothing.
Yeah, I don't think Balor gains anything.
At all.
I think that creative is... I think their mindset is having Finn be decisive adds legitimacy to the fact that he was the first Universal in an era of Brock.
I don't know, man. His whole Universal title reign was also one of those weird things. We've talked about it in the past. I feel like he would have lost that belt either way because Goldberg versus Lesnar would have still been the main event at WrestleMania. No matter what. That wouldn't have changed. Now, moving on. Hopefully, if you're listening to this podcast this week, you're trying to get a quick recap of what happened. So we do want to kind of move through this as quickly as possible. Let's go on to that awesome tag team match, Ruff. Tell me about it. How do you feel?
Man, great spots all the way through it. That Finn, my God, what a great spot.
I was drawn in immediately. There was some great play put in from the get. Great storytelling.
What are the chances that Cesaro's teeth was intentional? Is he crazy enough to do that?
I don't think so. I just don't think so.
Okay.
I mean...
But
let me put it to you like this, right? There's one thing about this whole thing that amazed me the most. That super kick happened. I pretty much will confirm to you that it was entirely unexpected with the way the blood splattered out of his face when he got kicked in the face. Just like Natty, a few months ago, last year, Natty lost her teeth too in a match. This does happen.
Was that already been a year?
It's going on there, dude, pretty quickly here. But to the point, right, the thing that impressed me the most about this match and kept me on this match and why it's my match of the night, I think, is Cesaro. I understand Cesaro's a great wrestler. Cesaro was always a great wrestler. I'm not going to comment about that, but the sheer fact that he took this hit and he kept going the entire time, I don't know how he did it. It seems like the pain would be ridiculous.
That was absolutely, really, that was just amazing. Like, I'd have been like, oh, we're done.
Surprising to think that, you know, that happens. Match is over. Don't go into a mild shock, at least.
And I think it did something, really, if you think about it. You know, if we talk about it, both tag teams are really good. You know, Rollins and Ambrose were kind of lingering in their singles runs. And I think this tag title has kind of elevated them again. But Cesaro and Sheamus teaming up really elevated their game. And that's why I call this my match of the night is, like you said, the spots were great. The storytelling was great. And then you add in, you know, Cesaro basically getting his teeth knocked out and still going full force for probably, what, another 10 minutes at least?
We are the bar.
Yeah, I mean, literally, that was when I think of every other match that comes out of here, and as much as I love women's wrestling, and I actually enjoyed the women's match, this was my match of the night, and it came so early in the pay-per-view.
Oh, I mean, I don't feel like that was a bad thing.
No, it's an unexpected match of the night. Like, there are some matches you see on paper, and you're like, this is going to be a fantastic match. Seeing this match on paper, you were like, it'll be good. But It was better than that.
What was your...
No one expected that whole spot where you had white noise to a powerbomb from a turnbuckle on top of him. No one saw that coming.
Was that your moment of the night?
It is.
For that match? That was mine too. I was actually just about to ask that question. I felt like it was
That was just an incredible spot. That I'm anyone who's a fan, when they come out tomorrow on Raw, everyone is going to be thinking about that spot.
I think that'll be their new finisher.
I'm okay with it.
It should be a finisher, but it didn't end the match. They got a kick out from it.
Oh, yeah, but I have a feeling you're going to see it more.
Steven, what was your moment of the match?
You know, honestly, if I don't go with that, I mean, that seems like the moment of the match. But for me, it was just the overall match. I can't even really call a point because I think the match itself was so well done. Even with, you know, the surprise of lose your teeth and bleed all over the place.
There's another moment in this fight. It is near the beginning after they go ahead and separate Ambrose from Rollins so they can start doing their work and getting somebody worn down, where he does the giant swing into the stairs. I did dig that. I loved how Dean played up that arm injury the entire match. Look, Dean is one of the best sellers in the book, even if he's not one of the best wrestlers with his modern moveset in the WWE era.
Yeah, I would actually... I mean, I'm going to say Ziggler's always the best seller. I'm sorry. Ziggler's always the best, but Dean is right there as far as selling injuries.
There's an interesting thing with Ambrose before. I know that I've said before that I really look at him as the modern equivalent of Roddy Piper. But at the end of the match, you see the win, and then Ambrose gets up, runs in a circle, and then collapses from exhaustion. And that felt very Piper-esque to me.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? For me, I don't mean that Dean Ambrose sells in quite the way that Ziggler does. There are moments that Ziggler oversells, though. But Dean Ambrose sells in such a perfect way to tell a story in a wrestling match that it's unbelievable. And that is what I mean by he's one of the best ever. He is from that classical trained era. He's probably one of the last ones. If I remember correctly, Killer Kowalski was one of his trainers, actually. And you can go back, and there's a FCW match. There's an FCW feud. Really, you should go watch it. It is of the villain himself, not Marty Scurll, but actually William Regal versus Dean Ambrose in FCW. And they tell a story about fucking Regal tearing apart Ambrose's wrist, and he sells the wrist injury the entire match. It's great. Great stuff.
I'm going to have to hunt that down.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Les Thatcher and Cody Hawk. But still. Dean Ambrose was trained by Les Thatcher. If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense.
It does. I mean, he feels very old school from top to bottom anyway.
Well, moving on, Ruff, this is your moment to shine. Introduce us to the women's match. Talk us through this women's match. Get us through this women's match.
Oh, the women's match. Well, understandably, because we don't ever talk about how much women weigh. But they made it a point when they announced all five that they gave Nia Jax a build weight on the mic to the audience there at the stadium. It wasn't just at the announce booth. Weighing in at 217 pounds. I consider that a little bit interesting anyway, just because I don't know where they decide to come up with that figure, but it works.
Does it? She doesn't really look like she's a 217-pounder.
Well, she stands at least a foot over our champion, right?
So that puts her at about 6 feet tall.
Right. So 6 foot tall and about that wide, I would say that honestly she might be right at about 220, sounds about right.
Continuing on.
Okay, we've got Bailey. We've got Sasha Banks. We have our champion, Alexa Bliss. We've got Nia Jax. And we've got Emma. Emma really surprised me. She's never been a terrible wrestler, but I feel like they always wanted more out of her, and I felt like she delivered exactly what she was supposed to tonight in the match. But the real thing in this match is that Nia sold. It's a common thing anymore. Almost once a night, someone's going to take a shoulder into the corner. They're going to run and someone's going to duck. It's almost a given on a nightly basis. Nia sold the turnbuckle hit of the night to me. I mean, it's a common thing, but hers was great. The crowd reaction was absolutely a win. And I thought it was great. And as expected, the year of bliss goes on.
Was that your spot of the night?
It's not my spot of the night. The spot of the white noise, the power bomb during the
tag
match.
Well, I meant for the match. That match.
For that match, yeah. The way Nia took that shoulder to the turnbuckle, that absolutely sold. I feel like that was the best part of everyone. You know, the commentators were talking about the four-person power bomb on the outside of on the ring apron. That wasn't it. It was her running into the turnbuckle. That was beautiful.
Steven, what was your moment of the match?
Even though it wasn't successful, I think my moment of the match was when Alexa Bliss tried to do the float over DDT that The Rock always does, or always did back in the day. I was really impressed to see her pull it out and try it on Nia Jax. If it's not that moment, it's the fact that... the year of the Bliss still continues, and I'm going to make a prediction. Bliss is going to keep that belt till tables, ladders, and chairs. And she's...
I guess you are trying to go ahead and we'll bring it up. Asuka is debuting at tables, ladders, and chairs. She should be completely healed by then. And this is going to come into play later tonight in this podcast here in about 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. When we also get into the discussion of Samoa Joe returning in October, too. They're both supposed to come back in October. Very exciting things. My moment of the match, if I have to give you guys one, I really do love the double Samoan drop. I love it. Build her as a beast. Build her as a big thing. Build her as strong. And you know what? You should. And the quadruple powerbomb's really cool. But I like seeing her use her strength. And that's cool. That's good to me.
Having her do a press of both girls before she did the drop was a brilliant touch.
Moving onwards, now we are at John Cena, right?
We are. We've got one other interesting thing that I want to bring up. Is it okay if I drop the post-show things into this?
Nah, you know, save it till the end of the save it till the end.
Okay. We'll get there then. Then we're at Cena and Reigns. First things first. After the way that the match ended and all the things that they're using for whatever purpose they're doing now, the franchise himself. He is a 16-time champ, correct? Cena's 16 times?
Yeah, 16. He tied Ric Flair.
They also brought up that if he would have won tonight, that John Cena would have matched the number of pay-per-view wins that the Taker has. He's got the record for that as well. So are we intentionally keeping John Cena on the cusp of breaking these other superstars' records?
Steven?
I think eventually he will break it. I honestly think it's going to be the time he wins his next championship, because I think John's got one more in him. It'll just depend on when it happens. Overall, for this match, though, I mean, they're still pushing Reigns, and you all know how I feel about Reigns. I'm not going to say the match was bad. I actually enjoyed the match, but...
I mean, okay, it's not a bad match, yeah. But at the same time, I would literally tell you that his match against Kevin Owens was better.
Oh, I'd agree.
Well, there's a term that I want to use about this. I say that there's matches that you do at weekly speed, and then there is WrestleMania speed matches. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like the kind of pace that happens when you have Undertaker versus Triple H at Mania. Lots of time between big moves. And that's kind of the pace that happened with Cena and Reigns, which makes me think that they're only going to put Roman Reigns in bigger style things, because it's obvious that they're still making him the guy, they're still pushing him as the guy, but you're going to only see him in matches that are running about the pace that happened tonight, is what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting anything to be quick matches, because they're making him run at a WrestleMania speed.
I want to go ahead and jump in. I know I said I wanted to wait on the talking Raw stuff. Look, I think we all understand at this point in time that WWE has one plan and one plan only, and that is to do Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and they are not budging from that plan. For better or worse, at this point, it is what it is. I can only hope the rest of the card is great. Take your booze, shove them wherever you want them. I understand. We literally had the moment at the end of the match where Vinnie Mac got what he wanted, and just like Daniel Bryan, we raised Roman's hands in a sign of, hey, we're trying to get you over. And it was what it was. And Cena's whole conversation about, oh, this guy's really improving, is what it is, and I don't really believe it, and it all sounds like company talk and bullshit if you ask my personal opinion. My moment of the match was John Cena walking off, though. I really thought that was my moment. Ruff, what was your moment for the match?
That was really huge, and of course, it turned everyone's head. Couple surprises, though. The Super AA, or FU, however you want to put it, and the Double AA. I wish it would have been three. But if it would have been three, then it would have been on.
I want everything to be a three. Yeah, I always want a three.
Ever since the Three Amigos, I want to see three of everything. But a double AA, as well as he rolled over and immediately flipped the first into the second, I thought was a great spot, too. It's probably what I liked most in the match out of the whole thing was seeing Cena do that.
Yeah, I'll say that was my spot as well. That was just really impressive to see. If it wasn't that, it was hearing the crowd chant, "You both suck."
Hey, I will throw in the whole moment where they did the table spot was pretty cool. And it confirmed my theory that it wasn't going to happen in the main event. So that was nice. But it was what it was. And the entire thing was just a gimmick to put Roman over one way or another. And in doing so, it kind of damaged the whole brand split, if you want my personal opinion on the thing. At the end of the day, having one free agent who's just allowed to do whatever the fuck they want isn't a positive in building a bi-weekly show. Well, you know what I mean. Two shows that happen each week. It doesn't help it. It doesn't at all. Let's move straight on to Enzo Amore versus Neville. Once again, great promo from Enzo off the bat. And it kind of went exactly the way I thought it would, to be honest with you. Steven, what were your thoughts on the match? It was a great costume.
Beetlejuice. That was my thought. I was like, is this Beetlejuice? Honestly, I thought it was really well done because Enzo did come in as the underdog. And of everybody who put in a scorecard, I believe me and you were the only two to pick Enzo to win. I think everybody else picked Neville, and I think a lot of people picked Neville. But, you know, you can't stop the realest guy in the room. And the way he...
Bada boom, how you doing? But at the end of the day, I do have a problem with how this went. I feel like in the last 2 months or so, between Tozawa and this, we've kind of been like, okay, Neville can lose the belt, but if that's acceptable, now, and I firmly believe that there's a good chance Neville will win the belt back tonight on Monday Night Raw on September 25th. Very possible. However, why the fuck did we have to run Austin Aries out of this company? I mean, Austin Aries is a great, talented wrestler. So I don't understand the booking choices involved in this. My moment of the match, though, was definitely the whole ending. When it's going into that countout, and he steals the belt and uses that as his way of getting over on Neville... I loved it.
Oh, that was perfect because, you know, it played into Neville's character so well because Neville is that narcissistic asshole. He's like, he's got my belt. And you just knew that Enzo's whole point was he knew he couldn't make it back to the ring in time. But if Neville came out of the ring, it would restart the count. And you knew that's where he was going. And that,
oh yes, it was definitely a brilliant play. It was a brilliant play there.
That the finish to the story was just amazingly done.
I got what I wanted out of it as well. I thoroughly expected that Neville would get kicked right in the sauce, and he did. Speaking of countouts, did anyone notice that like we just completely forgot a 10 count for Roman and Cena?
I felt like that was a storytelling percentage that they used. Again, I mean, the 10 count's not necessarily a rule so much as it's a guideline. And it's something that we do to keep things in a certain pace and to attach a pace to a match at certain times. It's not the first time it's been forgotten, and it won't be the last time.
I'm sure of that. It just feels that, like, I guess they expect us to work with time elasticity. Unless it's a stipulation, I would rather have it be in there, you know? If you're going to say no countouts, if it's for part of the story, then I want it to be like, you know, we're going to be able to fight outside. I might toss you over the guardrail. We might go up the ramp. Oh, and we didn't talk about that either. I feel like Cena going up the ramp at the beginning of the match was completely off the cuff, and he just saw an opportunity to tell a story. Did you get that too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just seemed really weird because it was like it happened right after the crowd was just like, you both suck. And he's like, okay, I'll leave.
Yeah, and I saw him look at the crowd and say, that's what you want, right? So he sees the moment. That's what makes him the superstar that he is to me. But anyway, I digress. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you're fine. You're fine. At the end of the day, I mean, it all was what it was. And it worked out in interesting ways over the course of the night. I mean, it's not my least favorite pay-per-view. And, you know, it takes us to the main event. And here we are. Got a few minutes left in this podcast, this recap. Oh, it's a Raw recap. But no, I mean, seriously, I wanted to go ahead and do a No Mercy review. This was important to me in a lot of ways. One, it's been a real hectic few weeks for, I think, all of us. Between hurricanes and everything else that's been going on in our lives. But more importantly, this was a real important pay-per-view in a lot of ways, and I loved the match. It's actually a great, great match, I would tell you. Two big men, WWE's been doing great big man wrestling. However, you know, WWE's been very much, please forget some of the things we've done with Braun Strowman in the last few months. Or, you know, like 6 months ago. Please ignore that stuff. And they started this match in a way that was very much like, please forget that Brock beat the shit out of Braun, you know, 9 months ago at the Royal Rumble. Don't remember that, please. We don't want you to think about that at all. And it started out just like the Goldberg match. When he pushed him down, I was there. I'm like, oh, shit. Braun might actually win this. And as far as the scorecard goes on Kayfabe Gimmicks on Facebook, you know, I got very excited. I was willing and happy to see a swerve. Always happy to see a swerve in the product. And I'm always happy to see the people who took the risk to get the points. And I'm not going to tell you that I actually thought Lesnar was the strongest option here. And there was a chance that this match was going to end in DQ. And frankly, it should have. That's what I'm going to tell you. This match should have ended in DQ. Or I almost kind of wish it had ended in submission. Because that is my moment of the night. I was going through the scorecard and I was looking at points. And I was like, the only way that this turns into an upset or something else can happen on this is if Lesnar doesn't win via pin. And there was a good chance that he was going to pull out the Kimura lock. And he hasn't used it in almost 4 years, really. Right since he debuted again, that's when he was doing the Kimura lock. And even Michael Cole was like, you know, oh man, he broke Shawn Michaels' arm. He broke Triple H's arms twice. It's a great move. I do love Brock Lesnar's Kimura lock. It's nice. And it adds a little bit more depth to his character that's just lacking. In modern-day WWE, Suplex City is all well and good, but Suplex City isn't fun to watch. And that was one of our questions tonight, was, is Suplex City going to get under Braun's skin? Can it wear down the Beast? And yes, it wore down the Beast, but the thing about Suplex City against somebody like Braun, and even it, when, you know, it debuted against John Cena, Suplex City wears the shit out of Brock Lesnar, and it's noticeable. It's very noticeable, if you ask me.
The commentary crew made a note of it as well. They saw it, so that they put it out there.
And I don't know how to feel about that. Maybe Brock needs to do a little bit more cardio. It's just not working quite right. And I feel like that is a negative. Ruff, what was your moment of the fight?
Kimura lock. Well, also, you know, this match was a win to me overall, because when they did the tail of the tape before the match, they billed Braun Strowman as exactly 100 pounds more than Brock Lesnar, and so here we are with a very definitive disadvantage, and they told a story. Because Brock Lesnar sold pain. Braun Strowman sold pain, very surprisingly to me. This was a decent length match. It wasn't a Goldberg length match. And, you know, we had Brock Lesnar running around looking like he had a broken back. And it was a good sell all the way through the match. And proved why he is a long-running champion. It really is good for Brock's character to not just be a squash all the time. And this one sold that he's not just strong, but he's smart, he he's technical, and he's got more than just suplexity. So I really was a fan of the entire match.
I agree with you. I really was a fan of the match, too. It just... Steve, what was your moment in the match? Go ahead and just let me know.
I'm going to say the Kimura lock as well. It just played really well. I think what I really liked about this match, honestly, is if we look at Braun Strowman, and Ruff, I know we've talked about this, how limited his moveset really is. But he came across as an imposing figure in this setup with Brock, to the point that he really kind of reminded me, remember when The Undertaker first showed up, how imposing he was?
No, definitely.
That's how Braun kind of came across in this. And even losing this match, I don't feel like Braun lost anything. I feel like Braun could literally be a contender for a rematch again and say, hey, I almost had you. And look, it wouldn't bother me.
I'm not going to say that's not true, but we are in September of 2017 right now. WrestleMania 34 is next year, right? And 34, right? I don't think I'm crazy.
No, you're not wrong. It's 34.
And, I mean, just being realistic, guys, Brock Lesnar hasn't wrestled much since he won the belt in April. And, just being more realistic about it, guys, Brock Lesnar is not going to lose the belt again before April at this rate. I mean, it looks like this. So, here's the thing, right? At this point in time, you have TLC coming right up. You have Samoa Joe coming back soon. There were many a way you could have done this match. And I feel like the most effective way would have probably been to have Samoa Joe show up. His entrance music hits in the middle of the match. And he walks out there. He doesn't have to get involved in the fight. He just has to distract the fight. I understand he's not necessarily healthy right now. I hope he's enjoying his time off and he's enjoying himself playing some Fortnite or something. But what I mean by this is by dusting the finish a little bit, TLC's in literally a month, October 22nd. You can go ahead and have Samoa Joe versus Braun Strowman for the number one contendership if you want. Go ahead and keep Roman busy. Slide him off somewhere. Or have somebody attack Brock already and take the belt off him for a couple months. Just do it. I mean, be it by Survivor Series and take a month or two off. I mean, he's going to have to sooner or later. There's only so many options unless they end up paying out more dates.
I mean, that's the perfect way to do it is we know we're going to get Brock Lesnar versus Reigns at WrestleMania. That doesn't mean that they can't take the belt off of him, give him complete time. You know, we've seen it before where champions don't get their rematch, you know, right then, like when they suspended Brock Lesnar after Seth Rollins won the belt at WrestleMania when he cashed in Money in the Bank. Brock Lesnar was gone for how many months?
And they need to do something about this at this point in time. In general, I mean, I'm going to give it maybe a 7 out of 10. Steven, what you going to rate it?
I can't really give it a out of 10 rating. What I am going to say is it's one of the first pay-per-views in the last couple of months I've really enjoyed watching where I didn't take my normal smoke break during a match. I literally watched every single match.
Rough?
You know, we only had 6 matches out of this pay-per-view, right?
It was a little small, yeah, especially after there was, like, what, 9 singles matches at SummerSlam.
Right. We had 6 matches tonight, and they were all decent. They were all really, really solid performances.
And what did you want to talk about earlier with the Talking Smack? I mean, we made it through the pay-per-view now. Let's finish up. Roll on out. What were you going to bring up with Alexa?
Okay. Alexa got interviewed, and here we are back to this whole thing I said when Emma started this whole program that she's currently on. She said, I've defeated everyone in the entire division tonight. Who am I supposed to go against next? Alicia Fox? Dana Brooke? So they brought up Mickie James, and she said, well, you know, you know, I have a lot of respect for her former career, you know, for an old lady. So we're down to only two options. It's either going to be Mickey James tomorrow, or we're back to my original thing of Paige showing up. But I think that Paige is going to directly go after Emma because of Emma saying that. So we're going to have a Mickey James new campaign against Alexa, and we're going to see Paige show up to confront Emma. I think that's where we're going.
Oh, I'd agree with that 100%. And I think we're finally going to see the whole Bailey-Sasha rivalry take full effect based off tonight. I think the women's division is going to get kind of interesting here in the next couple of months.
I'm going to go the exact opposite route here, guys. I'm going to tell you that the biggest thing I noticed tonight, and it kind of came down to that Talking Smack interview. She's like, oh, there's still a whole roster I didn't beat tonight. And there's a whole roster that didn't get used tonight very well at all. The tag team division. There's a lot of talent there. The club's been on a roll lately. The Good Brothers. You've got these women. They're not being used all the way. You've got plenty of singles competitors and men that aren't being used. It's a weird place to be right now. And I feel like we just are spreading ourselves not very thin at all. We're actually too closely bunched together, and we need to branch out. Maybe some more number one contendership storylines. Maybe something, but something needs to happen in order to bust this out of its shell a little bit. Look, WWE has signed so many people. They need to do something. And that's one of my final thoughts on this pay-per-view.
The last thing that we want is that whole Orton and Cena thing where they faced each other 200 times. I'm with you there.
And it seems to be the real problem in this modern WWE. We are too focused on maybe 15 people out of the 30-man roster, and that's not a positive. It's definitely not a positive at all. And that's really my final thought on this pay-per-view. Steven, what's your final thought?
I mean, overall, it's a great pay-per-view for me. I mean, I'd like to see some new blood get shots instead of seeing the same people over and over again. And honestly, if I look at it, I honestly think the women have done better job of having that. You know, I mean, think about it. Almost, other than Alicia Fox, Mickie James, almost everyone really has had a shot at Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, but then you add in Dana Brooks and you have Asuka coming in here too in a week. Or, you know, I mean, you got a lot going on in the women's division and not a lot happening.
Yeah, but it does feel like at least there's, you know, some variety. Even though nothing really happens, there is variety. I do think the Sasha Banks experiment's over. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of Sasha Banks here for a couple of months. I think she's just going to be mid-card women's.
I don't disagree with you. We can talk.
We had the girls yelling at each other during the whole match, and I love that because the crowd was paying attention to the smack they were talking at each other.
We can definitely. I almost want to move into some SmackDown talk almost. We got another episode coming out next week. I'm sure you will all be looking forward to it. Ruff, close us out tonight.
Tonight was a solid B plus for the company, for lack of any other way to put it. You can find us at Kayfabe Gimmicks on Facebook. I said it before and I'll say it again. You all have one unless you're running around on your significant other. Everyone's got a Facebook. Come find us on Kayfabe Gimmicks. You can find me at Roughly Music in a bunch of different places on Instagram. I'm also on Tumblr under Roughly Music. Find me on Twitter saying a lot of things that piss my wife off at Real Roughly. And if you want to know about the rest of my life, you can become one of my friends on Facebook. Roughly, like Rough and Ready.
Steven?
You can just find me hanging out in the group in Kayfabe Gimmicks, torturing some people and trying to think of some stuff to do each week.
I understand. As always, it's been a great night. Like, subscribe us, find us on Facebook, find us on YouTube, find us at tinyurl.com/kgimmicks, /to our YouTube account. And I wanted to get out a quick review of No Mercy this week, and I think it turned out really well. And we have a big SmackDown pay-per-view coming up. You can challenge me to try to take the kayfabe championship away if you think you got it.
Oh, but I got promise it. You,
I'm going for Jinder Mahal. I'm calling it right now. Jinder Mahal is going to retain.
Nakamura, son. Nakamura.
When I win again, just know it. And really, that was all. It's been a great pleasure, like always.
Shout out to the Steelers.
What? And that happened. So join us next week when I teach you how to bake a cake, because this is Kayfabe Gimmicks, and I'm out. Bitches.